This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the Creating Wealth Show with Jason Hartman. You're about to learn a new slant on investing, some exciting techniques, and fresh new approaches to the world's most historically proven asset class that will enable you to create more wealth and freedom than you ever thought possible. Jason is a genuine self-made multimillionaire who's actually been there and done it. He's a successful investor, lender, developer, and entrepreneur who's owned properties in 11 states, had hundreds of tenants, and been involved in thousands of real estate transactions. This program will help you follow in Jason's footsteps on the road to your financial independence day. You really can do it. And now, here's your host, Jason Hartman, with the complete solution for real estate investors.
Welcome, listeners from around the world. Happy New Year to one and all. Welcome to 2018. It is New Year's Day when you are probably hearing this episode, but I'm recording here on New Year's Eve from Las Vegas, Nevada, the no income tax state. Anyway, gosh, I hope you've got some big plans for New Year's Eve. I personally am going to see Calvin Harris tonight. I won a charity auction to go hang out with him in the DJ booth. You know, I kind of have a bit of a grudge against Calvin. Now, I know some of you are listening and you're thinking, who's Calvin Harris? Well, he is, I believe, the highest paid DJ in the world right now. I think he earned like $160 million last year or some insane amount of money like that. It's just crazy. Let me tell you something. The best business model in the music world, the best business model ever, has got to be electronic music. I mean, think about it. You can show up to do a gig, just one person has to come, the DJ, or the, really, these are composers more than they're DJs. And you don't have to bring a band. You don't have to bring a bunch of equipment. The equipment's all there. In fact, maybe your music's on your iPhone. You plug in your iPhone, you stand up there at the booth, and maybe you dance around a little bit, look cool, get the crowd going, you know, make a few adjustments on the knobs, but hey, you probably don't even have to do that. And your music is highly scalable and duplicatable, and you can make $160 million in a year, or crazy tens of millions of dollars. And what do I have a grudge against Calvin Harris about? Well, he dated my girlfriend. Figure that one out for yourself. If you follow pop culture, you'll know who she is. Just kidding. In my dreams. But yeah, so that's what I'm doing tonight. My friend Anya and I are going to see him, and I won a charity auction. Get to go hang out in the DJ booth with him, and that should be interesting. Should be fun. Maybe I'll report back next time if I'm recovered from that event yet. But anyway, so that's what I'm up to tonight. I hope you've all got big plans. Thank you to all of you who put in your five-year plan contest. We are evaluating and judging those entries now, and hopefully by the next episode on Wednesday, we will be able to announce some winners. Well, actually, we may not actually announce them on the show. We may just reach out to them directly and tell them, be sure you are at Meet the Masters, because maybe we'll announce them there. But either way, you'll get your prizes. So it should be a lot of fun. Thank you, all of those of you who are entering the contest, just our good old traditional raffle. It's not even a contest, but you can enter that at jasonhartman.com/contest. Technically not a contest, just a raffle. We will pick some winners for two free tickets to Meet the Masters. The event is filling up very nicely. It will definitely be our largest event ever, but you know, we've got a very big room. I do not think we're going to sell out for this event. I would love to be one of those hypey, lying, cheesy, unethical marketers that says, oh, the event is totally sold out. What I can tell you that's sold out is the Ron Paul dinner. The elite access tickets are totally sold out. But we do have VIP tickets left, and we do have general admission tickets left. JasonHartman.com/masters, JasonHartman.com/masters. And for a chance to win some freebies, even if you bought your tickets, of course, we'll just refund your money. Easy to do. Just log into the credit card account and refund. There you go. So JasonHartman.com/contest for a chance to win the raffle. So we will kick off the new year today with Danielle DiMartino Booth, get some of her thoughts. Of course, she is one of our keynote speakers at our upcoming Meet the Masters event. She was the only one who got a standing ovation at the Stansberry Conference recently here in Las Vegas. So that was really cool. Now, I'm not a member of that or anything, but a friend of mine was there, and he just invited me down, so I dropped by and checked it out for a couple hours. No big deal. Anyway, that's that, so we will be with her in just a moment. Now, look, it is a new year, and whenever there's a new year, there's always a lot of stuff to talk about. We could do a year in review. We could predict some things for the new year, obviously, right? And I do that. I've done that many, many times over the years, and we will do it again. However, I'm going to save most of it until after Meet the Masters, because I want to share some of that stuff there first. Anyway, I hope you're joining us. Did I tease you enough, entice you enough to go to jasonhartman.com/masters and get your tickets? Well, they are left and well, they're hot. So we will do that. And we've got a lot to talk about reviewing the last year and what we think is coming up in the new year. But I think overall, it's going to be a fantastic year. The Chinese really value the number 8. So, hey, there's an 8 in this new year, and that is the number for prosperity. If you study feng shui at all, not that I'm like super into that or anything, but hey, I sold real estate in Irvine for many years, so you got to know about feng shui in Southern California for sure. The number 8 is a very auspicious number. It's the prosperity number. Turn it on its side. What is it? It's infinity. So I think it is going to be a great year. A lot of good stuff coming. We're going to see some interest rate hikes, and that is obviously motivating a lot of people to buy properties. But hey, can you motivate them any more than you did over the past several years with these artificially low interest rates that we've had? What we will see as rates rise is we probably will see a little bit more supply in the marketplace, and we will probably see a strengthening in rents. Not that we haven't already had that, we have, but I think there will be even more upward pressure on rents as interest rates go up and fewer people are in the affordability pool to buy properties. And if you've studied at all my three dimensions of real estate, where I talk about that extensively, that's the dynamic that always plays out in these markets. Now, it didn't play out directly in the Great Recession 10 years ago because we had some abnormal forces. Well, first of all, we had the worst economy in 7 decades. And of course, in addition to that, we had all sorts of government interference where you heard all these silly politicians saying silly things, whether it was John McCain or Barack Obama. They're all out of their tree, okay, because they're all a bunch of Keynesian feel-gooder politician people with, you know, very little consideration of real market dynamics. Certainly Bernie Sanders is clueless when it comes to real market dynamics. And what happened is you saw them saying over and over, we got to keep people in their homes. But they never asked about hearing the dogs that don't bark. They never asked the question, did these people deserve to be in those homes? Were they qualified to be in those homes? Were they people earning $55,000 a year living in an $800,000 home because the lending was so absurd and so out of sync? So, hey, look, at the next cycle that hits in the economy, and it will hit. It always does. The next recession that comes eventually, I don't think it's going to be a recession caused by irrationally exuberant lending practices, that's for sure. At least not on the real estate side. Because on the real estate side, the lending practices have been very conservative. Now, you know what I talked about Dodd-Frank over the last year or so? I've talked a lot about it. I was looking at a year in review timeline article today, and back in February, of course, by the time you're hearing this last year, Trump, of course, was doing things through executive order to soften and lessen Dodd-Frank and lessen regulation. And I think that is going to be one of the really good things besides tax reform that come out of the Trump administration. Listen, I'm not any big Trump fan. I will say that because everybody wants to pigeonhole me as one. But I do think he's a heck of a lot better than the alternative, the criminal known as Hillary Clinton. Anyway, Trump's got his issues, no question about it. But I think tax reform is going to be great for the economy. And I think we got a lot of fuel coming into the economy and a lot of juice. So, one of our clients, Dan, I was talking with him on Voxer yesterday. And Dan, I know you're listening. How you doing there? Congratulations on your new home. And he was talking about how he hopes I wasn't too upset with him about buying a house for like $1.6 million in Orange County, California. And I said, hey, I understand, you got a kid on the way and the wife wants a house and you want to be able to paint and change things around and understand that. And he said, look up my house online. It's gorgeous. Check it out. And I looked it up, saw that it was $1.6 million. And then I saw the Zestimate for rent, $5,900 a month. Now, of course, all of you know that if you invest $1.6 million in real estate, I'd like you to get close to, or maybe you'll get a little above if you're lucky, but somewhere in the neighborhood, give or take, of $16,000 per month. So obviously in a high-end property, you can do a lot better by renting it. However, and remember, of course, the other hugely significant aspect of the GOP tax reform is that we're losing 25% of the mortgage interest deduction. That's $250,000 lost, which will be significantly, bad for the high-end real estate market where people would touch a mortgage in the neighborhood of $1 million. Of course, we'll have Ryan Shellhouse, who was just on the show in two episodes. He will be at Meet the Masters to talk a lot in a lot of depth additionally about tax reform, give you a little more macro look at it, because when we interviewed him, it was literally hot off the presses right after it. It was signed by the president. So that's significant. But look, folks, with all of the money coming into the market, into all markets, it would be very easy to suggest that we are living in a bubble economy. Cryptocurrencies, bubble, yes. Now, does that mean it can't blow up a little bigger? No, it doesn't mean that. It could go blow up a little bigger. Nobody ever knows where the bubble will burst. That's the thing that's hard to tell. And it's similarly hard to tell when we're at the bottom. Everybody's waiting and, spending their life waiting for the bottom of the market. And they're saying, no matter what, I'm going to have a ton of money this time to scoop up deals at the bottom. Guess what? When we're there, we won't know we're there. Did you hear me? When we're there at the bottom, at the trough, we won't know we're there. Similarly, when we're at the peak, we won't know we're there. Nobody knows. Not even the people with the most information on earth. Who are they? They are the central bankers. The Federal Reserve and all the rest around the world, they have better and more complete information than any of us. And even they don't know. Okay? They do not know. So, we don't know, and we won't know. But I do think that even in the high-end market, if you, God forbid, you bought a house in L.A. or Orange County or San Francisco or any of these expensive markets, New York, Boston, Miami, whatever, listen, I think this is going to play for a bit longer. You probably got a little more juice, so don't stress too much about it. I think you're probably okay for a little while longer. So we shall see, we shall see. But a lot more of this at Meet the Masters. And without further ado, let's get to Danielle DiMartino Booth. But be sure to go to jasonhartman.com/contest and enter the raffle, because we will have two free tickets for you, general admission tickets for Meet the Masters. And by the way, if you want to upgrade to VIP, really do that so you can get photo ops with the speakers and talk to them in the green room and all that good stuff. Just go to jasonhartman.com/masters and you can upgrade there, or jasonhartman.com/upgrade. Either one of those pages will give you the option to upgrade your ticket if you haven't done so already. In either case, Happy New Year to all. Let's start the new year off with Danielle right now. It's my pleasure to welcome back a returning guest, and that is Danielle DiMartino Booth. We are very excited to have her as one of our keynote speakers at our upcoming Meet the Masters of Income Property Conference. She is the author of Fed Up, an insider's take on why the Federal Reserve is bad for America. As you know, I couldn't agree more, and it's a pleasure to have her back. Danielle, welcome back. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. So happy to be here.
Yeah, good to have you back. So there is a lot going on in the world. Of course, you watch the bond market very closely, and the bond market impacts so much of the economy, especially the lending market and the financing market. You will be speaking at our upcoming event. We've got tax reform that is the new law of the land just a few days ago, the first time in really three decades we've had major tax reform like that. Maybe I'll start with that, you know, and it may be so soon that you possibly haven't assimilated all your thoughts on this. I don't know that anybody has. What do you think of tax reform and what we have, good, bad, or indifferent?
For me, it was a little bit too convoluted. I'm of the opinion that any and all tax reform in this country should have the noble aim of simplification. And in speaking with CPAs, you know, they haven't been this happy in years.
Because they got more work. Right.
Exactly. The tax code just got a whole lot more complicated. You know, I would have liked to have seen even a hint of honesty from our politicians, and that would have required getting rid of the carried interest provision. I didn't see that. And so much of this tax law depends on unicorns existing that I just don't know how much faith we can put in it. It's not that I don't advocate for a lower corporate tax rate. Of course I do. Who wouldn't? Mm-hmm. But it simply is not a durable enough plan. It relies on math I just don't see as being feasible. The CBO's assumption is that we don't go into recession for the next 10 years, starting now.
Right. Well, right.
I don't know how realistic that is at this juncture of the third longest economic recovery in U.S. history.
Well, so let me ask you about that. That's a great point that you make. You know, you're really referring to the business cycle. And I kind of wonder, Danielle, if the business cycle, when we had the worst economy in seven decades since the Great Depression, then we had the Great Recession, you know, would it be fair to start at the lowest point? Or would you sort of put that at the economy has been booming since maybe 2012, or the recovery has been going on since 2012, versus saying it's been going on since 2009 or 10, you know, when we're really at a low point? Just curious about your timeline on that.
It really depends on who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Jason, if you're an investment banker, life has been good since 2009.
Right.
It's been really good because of the deal flow, because of, you know, unnaturally low interest rates that have kept the bond market on a record run for seven consecutive years of issuance.
Yeah, right.
If you're the companies that have been on the receiving end of all of this cheap money and have been able to buy back their shares, that trend is critically slowing, too few people have paid attention to the fact that share buybacks have slowed appreciably.
Mm-hmm.
But it really depends on who you are. If you're Joe Q, who works in a restaurant and you've had your hours cut, or you've had to take on a second job, or if you're a millennial who's still in your parents' basement, you know, we have not seen movement in the mobility figures.
Right.
And it stumps all of the economists. Jason, it depends on who you are,
yeah, right,
whether or not
Right.
It started in 09 or 12 or has yet to start.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. It's never evenly distributed as much as the redistributionists might like to make it that way. It will never happen. So it does depend who you are, no question. And you referred to the millennials living in the parents' basement type concept. And, you know, that represents shadow demand for housing. It is amazing how slowly the millennial impact, with 80 million strong, are coming into the marketplace. But they've got, you know, largely an anemic job market. I mean, it's better, certainly, than it was. But overall, in comparison, wage growth has been, you know, very stagnant for decades. So, yeah, there's a lot to think about, no question. But tell us about the impact of the share buybacks. I mean, companies have benefited and wealthy people have benefited from cheap money for, like you say, unnaturally low interest rates for many, many, many years, artificially low. And now the buybacks are slowing. What impact does that have? And why aren't people paying enough attention to it?
Well, people aren't paying enough attention to it because the market has just come through a record run rate of quantitative easing. People don't appreciate the fact that 2017, this is a seminal report put out by Bank of America Merrill Lynch, Michael Hartnett, who actually is the first words in my book. I quote him. But 2017 has been a record run rate for quantitative easing globally. So the markets have plowed ahead based on that. And people do not appreciate the other thing that too few people are talking about in our world is that by the time we roll around to this time in 2019, this quantitative easing should be cut in half. If you tally up what Mario Draghi in the European Central Bank has committed to, plus what the Federal Reserve has committed to in terms of quantitative easing being reduced, that's $1 trillion. You're cutting $2 trillion from 2017 in half next year.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't tell me that that is not going to negatively impact all of these risky asset markets that, despite the fact that share buybacks have decreased, mm-hmm. have continued to run on steroids.
Yeah, very interesting. So how much of that QE cutback, of course, it's a global economy, we all know that, but how much of that is U.S.? You know, how extreme has 2017 been in terms of the run rate in
the
U.S.?
About half.
Yeah, right. So it's half in the U.S. as well as the world, is what you're saying.
If you're talking about the amount of balance sheet reduction to which the Fed has pre-committed and verbally said, we are not data dependent, the balance sheet reduction does not depend on the data. Future interest rate increases depend on data. But they have publicly stated that reducing the size of the balance sheet by this time next year at a $450 billion annual run rate is going to be like watching paint dry. I beg to differ with such naivete, but that's what they have committed to. And then Mario Draghi's committed to about that same amount in terms of tapering.
Uh-huh. So Draghi's going to taper it off. The Fed is going to taper it off. Tell us how that trickles down into the marketplace, what that means to, you know, your typical American.
I don't know. That's my eye-opening answer. We don't know what the unwind of the biggest experiment in monetary policy history is going to look like. We didn't know what the experiment was going to look like coming in, and we sure as heck don't know what the exit's going to be. But the odds are increasing that policymakers run out of the ability to control interest rates that they've really had for years and years now.
Yeah.
That is the biggest risk. It is why you see such confusion in the bond market. Mm-hmm. It is why, for all of the predictions that we're going to see some massive steepening following the tax cuts, but we haven't. The yield curve, the differential between the 2-year and the 10-year yields refuses to push past 60 for any sustainable period of time, 60 basis points.
And what does that mean? When the yield curve doesn't match like that, what does it mean?
It means that the bond market is dictating that any rise in interest rates that the Fed seems hell-bent on continuing with is going to slow an economy that is dependent upon leverage. Look, we've gone from $150 trillion of global credit in 2007 to over $220 trillion in global credit today. It is a magnificent
the economy is
re-leveraging.
Built on credit. There's no question about it. The whole thing is built on credit.
But it's never been built on this much credit.
No question, right.
Again, that's why I've got so many I don't knows.
Yeah, right.
Because
yeah.
It's impossible to say what could happen to the corporate bond market. because it's never been this big.
Oh, very interesting. So it would be interesting to see that chart and the increase in credit supply, money supply, in comparison to the increase in, well, the modest increase in global GDP and as well as national and population. It's just crazy. I mean, the house of
cards on
which are...
Well, Jason, what you're talking about is getting less bang for your buck.
Right.
Yeah. That's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Less bang for your buck.
What does that mean? You mean inflation?
The chart that you've just described,
mm-hmm.
it shows that we need more incremental debt to get economic growth.
Right.
That every time the Federal Reserve has gone on one of these binges, the inability to control themselves, the longer the interest rates have stayed low, the nastier the flip side is, the worse the hangover, if you will.
Agreed. It's just what I wonder is how long can the Fed, the U.S., and the world at large defy gravity? They seem to be able to kick this can down the road just indefinitely. It makes no sense. But it makes me think that it's not really all about math and numbers. Thoughts?
Oh, it's not. It's a confidence. The shame of this is that the word bubble has become so meaningless to so many people.
Mm-hmm.
It's become almost a cliche.
Yeah.
But to therefore make myself into a hypocrite, the biggest bubble out there is the confidence bubble.
Mm-hmm.
Confidence in central bankers' ability to defy gravity is enormous. Enormous.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And so underappreciated.
Yeah, yeah. That's... Be careful being confident about that, folks. That's a good point. Danielle, I mean, as we talk about the what I'll call the standard, really shouldn't even call it money supply, but currency supply, including credit, it would be remiss not to talk about what's going on in the cryptocurrency world with Bitcoin and all the rest. It seems like tulip mania beyond that. I don't know. Are you a fan or a detractor or just sort of neutral about it, about the cryptocurrency world?
Look, a long time ago in a land far, far away, with all due deference, I don't personally believe we can go back onto a gold standard.
Yeah.
So cryptocurrency in its original form was utterly appealing to libertarians who were of the opinion, rightly, that eventually all this money printing was going to destroy the value of the dollar. So the idea, the genesis of cryptocurrency is as solid as it can be. The idea of blockchain, the technology of blockchain is tremendous. But about 1,000 percentage points ago, any and all logic left the station. The train has taken off, and the fact that it is not derailed is insane because you are correct. Something that was logical in its inception has now become beyond tulips in terms of the size of the bubble. And you can't tell me that anything is a store of value that can lose 25% in a week. You just can't.
I totally agree with you. And you know what? I've said from the beginning, when I first learned about Bitcoin, when it was about $80, okay, and I wish I bought a bunch of it. I'm quite jealous that I didn't. But I'm not much of a speculator. I like cash flow investments. So I didn't. But I said right at that time, I thought I would love nothing more than to be wrong about this. I would love to see this succeed. But the idea that you can just create, the argument from the gold bugs and the crypto bugs, Bitcoin bugs, is that, you know, the dollar does not have limited supply, the euro does not have limited supply, and therefore it doesn't have intrinsic value. And it's not, you know, backed by anything. We've all heard these arguments incessantly, right? But the fact that you can just keep creating another ICO, an initial coin offering, and a new cryptocurrency tomorrow is like almost the very definition of fiat currency. It's crazy. Yeah, 21 million Bitcoin. So what? Just create a new one. It's every day,
so
practically.
That is a brilliant way of looking at it. And people ask me all the time. Unfortunately, they ask me all the time, which means that I'm getting really old because I can do comparisons. So it's not good. No,
yeah, but that's also called wisdom. It's wisdom.
True. It just requires I get my gray roots covered more frequently, but that's fine. We all have to support the economy in our own way.
There you go. Me too.
But people ask me all the time, Jason, is this 87? Is this 99? Is this 2007? What's your best parallel? And you know what my best parallel is? When you draw the parallel between initial coin offerings and initial public offerings, well, then you're like, okay, we're in 1999.
Mm-hmm.
But then go back to what I talked about, the $70 trillion of leverage that's been tacked on. Well, wait, no, that's more like 2007.
Mm-hmm.
or we're in both.
Yeah, wow, what does that mean? Nobody knows what that means.
Doesn't that twist your brain into a pretzel?
Yeah, it sure does. It sure does. Well, I meant to ask you a few minutes ago when you were talking about the Fed and the bond market and so forth. If you think, I mean, look, it feels like the Tax Reform Act is going to have the effect of repatriating some foreign money back into the U.S., maybe a lot of it, Danielle. Now, that seems like good news. Would you agree?
It wasn't good news last time for the economy, for the economy. If companies are truly at the point that they are ready to expand their workforces, I'd like for you to tell me why. So not that I want to push a question back on you, but at this stage of the business cycle, if you're Joe Q CEO, does it make sense to plan on expanding your business? I don't know. Unless the business cycle has been permanently killed off by the Federal Reserve and we can kind of keep this economy chugging along for two more years or three more years, and that will make it the longest recovery in the history of the country. If that's where we are and you're the CEO or the CFO and you're in charge of making these decisions, fine, then expand your business. It's just justifying it, historically speaking, is very difficult.
Well, I guess you'd have to say, though, that money actually sleeps. And I would kind of throw out the old saying that money never sleeps, right? Granted, even if the money's offshore, it still has an impact. It somehow trickles through the economy, right? But if it's
There's been a lot of investing overseas.
Right.
There's been a lot of significant capital expenditures that have occurred overseas. And that was one of the impetuses, rightly so, for tax reform.
Right.
But last time around, companies bought back their shares with what they repatriated. Now, stock market wasn't nearly as overvalued as it is today. It made more sense to buy back your shares. But just because I'm enjoying twisting your brain.
Yeah, sure.
What if companies bring the cash back on shore and pay down some of the debt they've built up?
Okay, so they pay down debt, they buy back shares, maybe they buy back less of them. There's always a counterparty. If they pay back debt, a lender gets paid off, and then they look for a new loan to make. If they buy back stock, that person who sold the stock back or entity that sold the stock back has that money now, and that money goes somewhere. It goes to another investment. I mean, it doesn't evaporate, right?
No, it doesn't evaporate. But does it build anything that is lasting? I wish that economists would quit scratching their heads over the productivity conundrum. I'm like, there's no productivity conundrum. Ask a German, where vocational training has never been stigmatized. They've continued to innovate, build, grow, capital expenditures. They've continued down that path. There's no productivity conundrum here. Out of all the developed countries in the world, the United States is the only one that's had a shrinking labor force for two decades running.
Yeah, right.
That's what happens when you don't invest. You're right. There are proceeds for every transaction. But at some point, those proceeds have to be put to a productive end. If you think about the housing boom, this was not a productive boom that we saw. We saw a lot of single family homes being built, but there was no lasting productivity gain from that. And what have we done this cycle?
You're talking about back in 2004 type housing boom, or which housing boom? Yeah, all right. Housing
Correct.
Boom and bust. Yeah.
Yes. And this cycle, we have built a lot of restaurants,
right.
A lot of retailers.
Yeah, right.
You know, but it's not productive.
Yeah, right. So what is productive then? I mean, this is the age-old question that every economist throughout history has wrestled with, and every person in government or central banking. You know how we both love central banks. What is the productive use then? Give us that, and I know we got to wrap it up, but can't let you go without that.
I have said, and you personally have agreed, that the greatest sin of central banking is that the education system in this country has been sacrificed. It's got to start there. It absolutely must start with educating our children such that we can be competitive on a global stage, because the Chinese and the Germans have no intention of slowing down in terms of their economies being dominant. We must educate our children. We must bring back vocational training. And if we have to get the unions out of vocational training and apprenticeship programs to do it, so be it. Bye-bye unions.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
It's difficult, though. These are difficult things to do.
Yeah.
But it requires politicians with spines, not politicians who build pork into a bill and then call it tax reform.
Right. Everything gets lost in lobbying. Trump made the statement that, you could do your taxes on a postcard and, everything got lobbied around. And, that's just never going to happen in this country. It's just the way that...
The bill made it more complicated. CPAs are happy in 2018.
Right. Oh, the CPAs are loving it.
That's who's happy.
Yeah.
CPAs are happy.
No question. I wonder if they'll stay happy, though, if that complexity lasts or it's just a transitional thing. That's a question we
Well, that's the thing. Part of this tax bill expires in a few years.
Yeah,
things don't go according to the math. It really is convoluted and confusing. Yeah. And I was at the front row. I was eating my popcorn. I was like, let's do this. Let's do this tax reform. Bring it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. Well, we shall see how it all works out, Danielle. Give out your website, and then I just want you to share a couple of bullet points or talking points for your upcoming keynote address at Meet the Masters of Income Property at our conference.
Sure, I'd be happy to. My website address and my Twitter handle are the same, DeMartino Booth. That's my entire last name, no spaces, or at DeMartino Booth. Hop on my Money Strong website. I'd gladly have you do a free trial membership for my weekly newsletter. It is never boring. It is always entertaining. And I will be talking about the Federal Reserve, what caused me to write Fed Up, and then I'll look ahead at the new leader, at the first non-PhD in economics in over 30 years since Paul Volcker ran the Federal Reserve. Will a pragmatist who does not have a purely economics academic background be able to turn the ship, be able to start a new era? Because it's time. It's over time. It is time to move past what started on August the 11th, 1987, when Alan Greenspan took office. It's time.
Greenspan was the ultimate Keynesian. He sort of betrayed his roots with Ayn Rand, I think. But, interesting, Danielle, I can't wait to see your talk. The last conference I was at where you spoke, you got a standing ovation. You were the only speaker that got a standing ovation. But I got to ask you before you go. So you mentioned Volcker. Now, Paul Volcker is known as the Federal Reserve chair that, sort of made the country take the hard medicine, who broke the back of inflation. Are you a Volcker fan?
I've always been a Volcker fan.
Yeah, okay. I thought so, yeah. I just wanted to...
The first book I ever read on Wall Street was Liar's Poker, and I love the man the minute, and I was on Wall Street, and I can say what I want. I'm a Wall Street veteran.
Right.
But he was no friend of Wall Street, and that should be job qualification number one.
I love
for
it.
A Federal Reserve chair.
I'm giving you a standing ovation now. I love it. Good stuff. Danielle,
I'm taking a bow now.
Yeah, take a bow. You deserve it. Hey, we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks. It's just going to be great. Folks, if you have not purchased your tickets for Meet the Masters of Income Property yet, go to jasonhartman.com/masters, jasonhartman.com/masters, and do that right away. And if you have and you didn't buy a VIP ticket, then you can upgrade and you can get a photo op with some of our speakers and stuff like that. So it'll be a lot of fun. Danielle, thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate your time today.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode. Welcome to Meet the Masters of Income Property Investing. I'm your host, Jason Hartman.
Join us in beautiful La Jolla, California on January 12th through 15th. This is your chance to meet the masters of income property investing. Learn from an amazing collection of experts all in one room. You'll meet a ton of local market specialists, mortgage lenders, tax professionals, and investment specialists such as Jeff Myers of Myers Research and John Burns, real estate consultant. Learn from Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Advisors, Ken McElroy, his real estate investment expert, and Garrett Sutton, his attorney who specializes in asset protection. Find out what leading economists are predicting for 2018, including Danielle DiMartino Booth, founder of Money Strong LLC, and Andrew Zatlin from Moneyball Economics. Hear from leading entrepreneurs how to maximize your income streams. You'll learn unique financial strategies from Patrick Donahoe of Paradigm Life, and how to give birth to a brand from Brian Smith, founder of UGG Australia Brand. This year also features a very special guest, Dr. Ron Paul, former congressman, presidential candidate, and staunch advocate of liberty. Right now, you can upgrade your ticket to include VIP access and a dinner with Dr. Paul. Enjoy a fine dining experience and fascinating conversation. Seats are limited, so upgrade your ticket today. Ask questions and learn why real estate is the most historically proven asset class. Armed with new information, you'll have the confidence to take massive action. As the saying goes, don't wait to buy real estate and wait. Surround yourself with like-minded people and build friendships that will last a lifetime. Share strategies and tips with other investors and hear about their successes and struggles. Make 2018 the year you decide to achieve your dreams. Real estate is a proven way to create true wealth within your lifetime and achieve long-term financial independence. Don't wait. Join us in La Jolla. Reserve your seat today.